Today's Perek in Tanakh is Yoshua, Perek Yudchet. And so where we have left off was with a very dramatic change in which Yoshua insisted that Shevet Yosef, that had come back to complain, is meant to take responsibility for doing the Yerusha on his own area. And this, we saw, was the result of what had ended in the previous Perek, in which the national army was no longer taking responsibility for the pockets of the indigenous population that had remained, except insofar as to turn them into a must. They needed to be paying tribute and to recognize the presence of Yisrael as being primary. But as far as taking over the land to live, this was specifically what was supposed to be achieved by the Shvatim. What we saw at the end of the parak yesterday was a tremendous sense of lackadaisical attitude and entitlement in which people were insisting that somebody do the work for them. And they sound essentially like a bunch of crybabies. We can't go down there, there's tanks, and it's there, and we don't have enough room, and it's mountains, and who's going to clear the mountains, and so on and so forth, which Yoshua threw straight back in their face and said to them, if you're such crybabies, you should go hide in the forest. I mean, you've got so many people, after all, what are you going to do about an iron heart? Now this, the truth is that we're going to see now that this was particularly fitting because the two Shvatim that had been given their Nachala, which was Yehuda and Yosef, they were the Shvatim that were meant to first assert the presence in Eretz Yisrael for all of the Shvatim. And that's why the 2.5 Shvatim that took in Eber HaYarden and the 2.5 Shvatim that take first in the beginning of the Nachala really are parallel. And the Siddurim, if you take a look at the Siddurim, instead of the prokim of the goyim, you see that they're set up in parallel. And again, remember that every single time we talk about it, Yoshua makes a point of showing that it's a parallel. This is what was taken in Eber HaYarden, Moshe Eber HaShem did that, Benot Zolofchad also took an Eber HaYarden, and Menashe took half an Eber HaYarden. So we have this transition of Benot Zolofchad, Menashe, but the truth is that there are two Shvatim that essentially have taken the southern and the northern area, at least of the area that was covered so far, and that was Yehuda and Yosef. And Yoshua is going to make a point of this to the other Shvatim. Basically, we have taken over. When we say we have taken over, it's really only Yosef and Yehuda. But those two Shvatim were meant to be the essential Shvatim, and it's for a very simple reason. The Mishkan is only in two places, really. So it's in Yehuda, and it's in Binyamin, and that creates, in Yosef, which is Mishkan Shiloh, and that creates protected area where Binyamin is going to appear today. And there, Bein Ketefav, and we're going to talk about Ketef again and again when it comes to Binyamin, which are the ridges of the mountains, there will be Yerushalayim, there will be the ultimate Menucha v'Nachala. But what we've begun to do is create a bracketed area of space in Eretz Yisrael that is protective. Now, if these Shvatim are going to start making problems, then we might as well just give up on the Yerusha. So therefore, Yoshua's response to Shevet Yosef was very, very tough, very unsympathetic, and very demanding, almost to the level of outright sarcasm about how everything that they're talking about is precisely what they're supposed to be handling and not coming back to him. And it's with that in mind that as we begin now the next parak, parak Yudchet, we discover indeed that it is time to put up Mishkan Shiloh. But what happens is that Mishkan Shiloh, instead of becoming a Migdash, becomes a halfway measure. It's a very strange thing. It's not the Ohel Moed Shebe Mishkan, that was Shebe Midbar, which was the Mishkan. Neither is it the Bayit that needs to be. And instead, says the Gemara, weirdly, it was made like a Bayit, so that it was built of stone, but its roof was built using the Yiriyot, like the Mishkan. So it had a cloth roof and stone walls, almost as if anybody walking in gets the sense of, we're only halfway there. I mean, it's literally like a half-unfinished building. Very, very powerful vision of how the Shekhinah is not yet Kavua, and we've only begun building. This now ties in directly in this coming parak to the vision of the Atzlut that's involved in the taking over of Eretz Yisrael. So, v'yikahalu kaladat b'nei Yisrael Shiloh, all of b'nei Yisrael from all of the Shvatim get together in Shiloh, v'yashkinu sham et ol moed v'yaretz nichbasha lifnehem. Once the Mishkan was kavua, as we know, the essential piece of Eretz Yisrael is the Ashras HaShechinah. So Menucha, Nachala, which defines what Eretz Yisrael is the Shiloh or the Yerushalayim or the Beit HaMikdash to be. Without that, we're not really there. And this goes in both directions. Once you put the Olam Moed, it's fair to say that the Eretz was Nichbesha Lifneihem, because now we're there. But furthermore, once you put up the Olam Moed, it's easier to actually take possession of those pockets which had not yet been taken possession of. But remember that the Eretz HaNisharet that was described before in detail, where Yoshua, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Yoshua and says, look at all of this area, you haven't begun even touching this area. That's not pockets. That's like the entire north of Eretz Yisrael. It goes all the way basically to Nahar Prat. I mean, we're talking about most of the territory of Eretz Yisrael was untouched. Plus, the other Shvatim, who were supposed to be protected in between the areas of Yosef and Yehuda, weren't even aware of the fact that their Nachala was included within. So we're talking about Binyamin and parts of Gad and Shimon, so that nobody had really done anything. And there was a sense, again, of it's being very lackadaisical, things will work out. Because now that the army has been disbanded, so things will work out, yeah, whatever. So vayivatru b'vnei Yisrael asher lo chalku et nachlatam shiv'a shvatim. Remember that we're left with seven whole shvatim that do not have a nachala yet. And this was driving maybe Yoshua furious. Yomer Yoshua b'nei Yisrael, ad ana atem mitrapim lavol ereshet haaretz asher natan lachem adonai Elohei avotechem. How long is this going to go on? This is outrageous. Where you don't have the guts to go and do what needs to be done. Now this clearly is a continuation of the absurd discussion with B'nai Yosef that we saw yesterday. So now he gets a move on, and the truth is that we saw that this was a little bit expressed in Yoshua's own personal aging, so that he was initially a Zoris. The word Nar actually comes from the word to be Mitna'er, somebody who moves, gets a move on all the time. This Yoshua was once a Nar, is now called a Zake. Now he himself is not getting a move on because he's reflecting the way that B'nai Yisrael are. This is the nature of Malchut. As the Gemara says, a generation gets the leaders it's worthy of. It's also true. So the fact is that now he's upset. He sees that everything is just very, very weak and loose. And he calls them together and he says, look, there's something wrong over here. What we need to do is maybe begin logistically setting it up. Maybe nobody has a sense of what belongs to them. Now the truth is that Yoshua himself had the Kabbalah. As the Rishonim point out, he knew what the Tchumim of Eretz Yisrael were, because Merumas in the Brochas, even as Rashi brings, the simple pshat in the Brochas of Moshe Rabbeinu, was the shape and location of the various Nachalais of the different Shvatim. And they were all reflected in the personalities of the Shvatim themselves, to the extent that all Moshe Rabbeinu needs to do to provide a Brocha for what the Shevet is to describe its Nachala. And somehow or other this relates, Baruch Marchiv God. What the heck does that have to do with God? The fact that God is shaped like a Archava, that it gets wider, as we saw before when we were talking to Nachal of God, it gets wider as it goes to the east. Who cares? This is a bracha about the Shevet. So the actual, and this goes on not only to the shape, but Moshe Rabbeinu speaks about the topography, it speaks about the climate, as if this is part of the soul of the Shevet. So what Yoshua sensed at this point is that the members of the Shvatim in being mit'atzel did not have a sense of their nachala, and therefore were lackadaisical. I mean, basically, life is for rent, so to speak. We don't need our own place. And therefore, he did a brilliant thing. What he did was something that had never been done before. He asked for habulachem shlosha anashim lashav. I want a representative of three people from each shevet. Now that was part of the chavivut of Abraham. They are to do a survey of the entire Eretz Yisrael, both the area that was already kavush and the area that had not as yet been kavush. I want it all mapped out in writing. Let them figure out between themselves what is appropriate for each shevet. Let the Shevet get to know what their own desire is. Lefi nachlatam, bring the book back to me. V'yavo Eli. V'yitchalku ota l'shiv'a chalakim, and now you're going to split the rest of Eretz Yisrael into seven parts, including the area that is currently protected by the presence of Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Yosef. Yehuda yamod al gvolo minegev, It's Yehuda that is all the way to the south. Beit Yosef Yamdu Agvulam Mitzafon. They have theirs in the north. Obviously, there's going to be those Shvatim that are going to take much further to the north. But even what we have so far is going to include the Nachala of some of the Shvatim. Vatem Tichtavu Et Ha'aretz Shivah Chalakim. You are to set it down. And Eveitem Elayena, bring it to me in Shiloh. Because as we saw with the story of Banot Zelofehad, with Moshe Rabbeinu, they went in front of the Ohel Moed. So over here, the power of the Ohel Moed and Elazar HaKohen and the Ruach HaKodesh of the Goral, I will be Yariti Lachem, I will throw the Goral Po, Lifnei Adonai Eloheinu, in front of God. And we need only 7 parts. Why only 7 parts? Ki ein chelek lalaviyim bekir bechem. Because we're not giving anything to these Shevet Levi. As we know, Kichunat Adonai Nachalato, his Nachala is the service of God. The God veruven vechati shevet amenashe, they already took Lakunach Latan me'ever liarden mizracha, asher natan leMoshe eved Adonai, and there we're left therefore only with the remaining 7. Vayakuma anashim vayelechu, and so the men got up and went, but vayetzav Yehoshua tochim lichtov et haaretz leMor. It seems very repetitious. That Yehoshua commanded them to write down the maps, telling them once again, but we know that the Lashon of Tzav is the Lashon of Zeruz. Ein Tzav el Lashon Zeruz, say Chazal. Which means that what he was doing was once again asserting that you're being mitrapeh. And mitrapeh throws you into the hands of the Rifa'im, as we saw in the Gemara, someone who is merape yadayim, which, by the way, the Gemara has tainas on Yehoshua as well. And this we learn out from the story of the Sukkot that was made at the time of Ezra. And there the Pasuk says, they never made a Sukkot like this, miyamod Yeshua, no Yehoshua, Yeshua bin Nun. So the Gemara says, why was he only Yeshua? Because when they came back from the second Beit HaMikdash, they recognized that Yerusha Eretz Yisrael is a spiritual enterprise. They took advantage of coming into Eretz Yisrael to be Mavatal the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah. That's the whole story in the Gemara in Yuma. And the taina was that, okay, Yehoshua, when he came into Eretz Yisrael and had the schus of Eretz Yisrael, that should have been the first thing that he did. And didn't. Therefore, this Sukkot was the first Sukkot that was made intelligently from the time of Yeshua. Well, Moshe maybe changed his name to Yehoshua, but he doesn't deserve it. So in other words, the hey of his name is meant to have been the struggle which he didn't have. So the Hitalchu Va'aretz, that he's being mitzavet of his Lashon Ziruz, and as we saw, the Hitalchu creates the Chavivus, as it did today with the Chavivuta de Avram, and that's what is needed over here. We need for them to feel that connection. And then when you come back, Shuvu Elai, Upo Ashlich Lachem Goral Lifnei Adonai B'Shiloh. Vayelchu anashim, vayavru v'aretz, vayichtevu le'arim l'shivah chalakim al sefer. And so, indeed, they made a survey, the entire Eretz Yisrael, and including within it the various cities that were suitable for the various nachalot. Vayavo el Yehoshua l'machane Shiloh, and they came back, made the survey, and at last it was time for the actual hanchalat shivat ha-shvatim. Vayashlich lem Yehoshua goral b'shiloh lifnei Adonai. And so, as Chazal tell us, this was basically a magical event, because Yehoshua always knew that this was destined to be the Nachal of Reed Shevet. The Shvatim themselves had defined their own area. Nonetheless, it was done al pi agoral, because as Chazal tell us, the only way to be Mechalek Eretz Yisrael, as Hashem says, is al pi agoral, because that way there can't be any tainas in later generations. We were all open to the random goral. This is what we agreed to do. This is what came out. We all accepted it. You can't go back now and taina against it. But what was done was that they stood in front of the Mishkan and the Oren HaBrit, and you had Elazar HaKohen wearing the Urim V'Tumim, who would announce, we are about to pick out of this hat Shevet X, and then we will pick up out of this hat Nachala matching X, the following Nachala. And that happened 7 times. So that Yehoshua put in his hand, and indeed Shevet X would come out, put in his other hand, and indeed Nachala matching Shevet X, as Elazar HaKohen had announced in advance, so that everyone saw that it was Al-Pi Ruach HaKodesh, and Al-Pi HaGoral, which meant that the Goral spoke. So that when the Goral came up, say Chazal, there was a voice that said, Ani HaGoral, Aliti L'Shevet Ploni, and this is who I am.
Like a choosing hat.
It's the ultimate choosing hat.
The sorting hat.
Yes. This was indeed the ultimate sorting hat, so that here wasn't the hat that spoke, it was the goral that spoke, but clearly somebody's been reading the Medrash.
This is after it was mapped out?
Yep. Wow. Right. Vayal goral mate v'nei binyamin l'mishpachotam. And so the first to come out, and of course, what else would you expect? For many reasons. I mean, first of all, we know that mate v'nei binyamin was part of the mate of the b'nei Ephraim. So it makes sense that he was put there. In other words, in the three flags that walked in the midbar, they walked together anyway. But l'maisa, of course, the next thing that we're thinking about after Shiloh is the Beit Olamim, and the area of the Beit Olamim, which indeed Binyamin was very upset even about Shiloh, as the Gemara says, that why in the world they should get the whole thing, and indeed Bnei Yosef were upset that a little piece stuck out from Binyamin to take over part of Shiloh. They were upset, everybody was upset, because it needs to be Binyamin. So the next thing that we talk about is Bnei Binyamin, and where did their Gvul turn out to be? Vayetze Gvul Goralam Bein Bnei Yehuda Uvein Bnei Yosef. So they were actually positioned right between the areas that we thought had already been clearly taken up by Yosef and Yehuda. It turns out that actually that wasn't quite true. Part of that territory was the territory of Binyamin itself, and we now need to look on our map so that we can trace their gvul.
I call it the Binyamin Belt, because it comes out from the Am HaMelech, includes Yericho, it spreads out, goes up to Yerushalayim, goes out to Kiryat Yarim. This is Beit Charon Elyon, where this mark is. This is Beit Charon Tachton here. So it says that it goes, the boundary went to the south of Beit Charon Tachton and came around to Kiryat Yarim. So it's either like this or it's like this. But this, what? Kiryat Yarim is Binyamin. It used to be when you went to a place called Telstone, and you're familiar with it.
You mean what he did at the end?
You pass on the road, you're now passing the boundary of Binyamin.
Yeah, but that's the same thing that Barnea did before, which was, I don't know what his basis is.
Yericho goes...
No, Yericho goes, but that's at the north, that's at the southern part. You have this prejudice that Yehuda somehow came up to... when we talk about Yericho, we mean Yericho with a line to the Yam HaMelech, which is not so. It's Yericho straight across to the Yarden. That was the Gvul. You did the same thing we were talking about the Yehuda boundary.
That would be said by Ephraim, but here the contact point between Yehuda and Binyamin has to be at the same point.
We'll see.
Okay.
Actually, if you take a look at this map, you see better that the original, the northern boundary, is indeed the way the boundary was originally defined for Yehuda. It's Yericho, straight across to the Yarden.
Where does he have Ephraim coming across Yericho?
East of
Yericho
coming from the Yarden. Basically together.
He has it going to the north of Yericho instead of coming from the east, from the Yarden.
Okay, but it still comes from the Yarden. Yeah. So, but it certainly doesn't come all the way down here. Okay, but let's take a look at the map.
That's
self-contained.
The point.
Self-contained. Okay, so let's go into these gvulot now. Starting now.
Even the middle, one of
the cities
marked.
Okay. Is there any town in Gibeon today?
LG.
And so here is the goral. Vayal goral matei v'nei binyamin l'mishpachotam vayetzeg v'ul goralam bein b'nei Yehuda uvein b'nei Yosef. Vayilam ha'gvul l'pat zafona m'nei ha'yardein. So the gvul to the north is the same gvul essentially that was defined before as the southern boundary of Bnei Yosef, and we start with the north, which is very unusual. Till now, as we pointed out, the Gvulot always began in the south. The reason that we open up the Gvul to the north may be, first of all, Remes the Beit HaMikdash, Yarkatei Tzafon. So the Hashivas over there of Tzafon was at Kochi Kadoshim Arba Tzafon, and therefore the Gvul of Binyamin, we want to relate directly to the Kiddusha. But the other reason may be more simple, which is that Yosef and Binyamin are basically a team. We always talk about the Malchus of Yosef is Malchus of Binyamin as well, that Shaul HaMelech. Now that Binyamin provides, historically, the chibur between Yosef and Yehuda in every way, philosophically, politically, and geographically. So it's the only Shevet that went together with Yehuda when the breakup occurred. So you have Binyamin and Yehuda, and it also maintained, of course, the Malchus that was the Kayach of Bnei Rachel, which is Malchus of Shaul. So this is a very significant spiritual issue as well, It has a special role in Hanukkah and the Parshas of the year at this time, which is the relationship of Yehuda and the other Shvatim to Binyamin, how Binyamin becomes the Chibur to Yosef for the Shvatim in their argument here in the Parshas. So their Gvul now went min ha-Yarden, that's Yarden Yericho, Ketef Yericho mitzafon. So this was the Ketef, is very, very central in Binyamin, because it's Ben Ketefav Shachin. So the ridges of Binyamin figure very prominently, just as a ridge is prominent, a prominent ridge. So we have over here the ridges. The Ketef of Yericho from the north, which is similar to the Me Yericho that we have. So a Ketef is a very sharp Yerida, which we know is right there. So that means Yericho, as we'll see later on, is in Binyamin. The Allah Bahar, and then going towards the Ma'arav, Allah Bahar Yama, so towards the west, we went up now, the Har, towards Beit El, and the Hayutot Otav, the edges of this Gvul in Arvot Yericho, were Midbara Beit Aven, Midbara. The way in which the word is pronounced is stressing the element of midbar, which is dabar. Dabar means, there's different elements of midbar. One is speech, of course, midaber. But there's also dabar in the sense of dabarim lador. So dabar is that which is controlled. It refers to the ri'ya of sheep. Dabrei hatzon. So the wilderness is an area where people will have dabar, they will be doing things, moving their sheep there. And that area was also included, so that's the midbar, which is the wilderness area that was open for grazing. And then, continued on, Vavar Misham HaGvul Luza, the old city Luz, El Katef Luza Negba, Beit El. So now, the year we're told that Beit El, which was a newer city, that's when Yaakov Avinu changed now Luz to Beit El, it meant that there was new construction, so that the Gvul actually went between these two places. So Beit El was south of the ridge that was Luz. Beit El indeed was including in Binyamin, we'll see later on. The Luz itself was part of Yosef, as we'll see later on also. So that means that the Gvul between Binyamin and Yosef went through this area between the old city of Luz and the new city of Beit El. That must have been a few blocks away from each other and just passed through that sharp area. And then went on to the Yarad HaGvul Atarot Adar, the very same Atarot that we saw before, was now included here, Alahar Shemi Negev, the Beit Charon Tachton, and this was on the mountain, which was Minegev, then the Gvul was Minegev, but the mountain was south over here. Beit Charon, we know, remained in Ephraim, but the city of Beit Charon itself is listed in Ephraim. So Beit Charon, the Tachton, was now the northern, northwest corner of Binyamin. So if you take a look at your map, you're now at the northwest, farthest place of the Gvul, at which point it turned, V'ta'ar HaGvul, and now the Gvul starts to turn, so we now are going to follow it, V'nasav L'pa'at Yam, Negba Minahar, Asher Al Pnei Beit Charon Negba, V'yuto Tzotav Kiryat Baal, Hir Kiryat Yarim, Ir B'nei Yehuda, Zot Pa'at Yam. And so at that point the Gvul turned, so we had sort of like a curve in the Gvul, which it turned down towards, from the Har of Beit Charon Tachton, and then started turning towards the south, and this way it ended up by turning that way, telling us what the western boundary is, because if we follow it down to the south, we end up with a western boundary. And therefore, Vinasav, it turns, again, remember the Grosskraut over there, it turns and then comes back to the same line, to Pa'at Yam, along the Pa'at Yam, in other words, along the western boundary, and it keeps going Negba. The first Negba is referring to the Gvul, the second Negba is referring to the mountain, as we saw earlier. Al Pnei Beit Charon, this was now, Pnei always means to the east, so it's to the east of Beit Charon. Vayuto Tzotav, and then the edges of the Gvul touched on Kiryat Ya'arim, which was originally called Kiryat Baal, or we referred to it earlier, Ba'ala, just Stam Ba'ala. So Kiryat Yarim, obviously a Jewish name, was a new name, and therefore this was still Oyer B'nei Yehuda. That city was included, remember, in the list of the Arei Yehuda. And Zot Pa'at Yam, following this piece down, you end up with the western boundary of Binyamin, and that ended up being a boundary also for Shevet Dan, as we're going to see later on. Now, Pa'at Negba, the next psukim, are going to define the southern boundary. The southern boundary of Binyamin, which is now the northern boundary of Yehuda, from the line from Kiryat Yarim until the Jordan River. So at this point, V'upa'at Negma, Mikzeh Kiryat Yarim, following now the southern boundary to the east from Kiryat Yarim, V'yatza Gvul Yama, V'yatza Al Mayan Ein Neftoach. The Gvul was a little bit over here to the south, but we don't know exactly what it was the south of, so it's a little bit strange. V'yatza, and then went to the Mayan Mei Neftoach, so that all that we know is basically, we don't know exactly how it went, but it got ultimately to Mei Neftoach, which we think is Lifta. So that means basically you're traveling from Telstone to the entrance to Yerushalayim along the boundary of Bnei Binyamin. So that means that the highway would basically be the line from Kiryat Yarim to the place that we call Lifta today, and then would continue on from the Mayan Mei Neftoach, V'yarad al gvul k'tzei ahar asher al pnei gei ben Hinnom. And so at that point, it touched the bottom of the mountain, which we call Har Tzion, that is at the edges of the valley, gei ben Hinnom, and that is to the east of Yerushalayim, a couple of blocks from here. V'yarad, and went from there down, from gei Hinnom, asher be'emek Rephaim tzafona, and this is now north, the be'emek Rephaim. The Arad, and that's today also the street that we call Emek Rephaim, basically comes directly into, I mean, they just changed the name, but goes through the train station into, if you follow the street straight down, into where that little bridge is, goes over into Gei Ben Hinnom, from Emek Rephaim. So the Arad Gei Hinnom, El Ketef Ayavusi Negba, the Arad in Rogel. So at that point, it touches the area of Yerushalayim to the south and continues on down into Ein Rogel. Now here we have our special report by Rav Barnea.
This discussion is whether Ein Rogel is Bir Layub, which is if you drive from Ir David continuing south like 2 minutes, 3 minutes, or is Ein Rogel really the spring that everybody else is calling the Gihon? That's a new opinion, but with a lot of work behind it. But let's assume that it's called Jabz Well, which was in use even into this century, this past century, for drawing water.
What's it called? Which one?
Jabz Well, Bir Layub. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but to Armitzafon, then turning to the north, or that could be north of Ein Rogel, it went to Ein Shemesh, which was another place of water, another ayin, El Gililot to Gilgal, and then, after going to Gilgalot, which was Nochach Maale Adumin, the Arad Evan Boan Ben Reuven, this place of Evan Boan Ben Reuven, we saw before also as part of the Gulites, was apparently the name of a famous family, and was an outcropping of rock that they called the Finger, that the Arabs still call today. The Avar El Ketef Mul HaArava, and then reached the ridge. So Avar El Ketef Mul HaArava Tzafona, the Arada Arvata. And from that point that it touched the Arava, it went down all the way to, through Beit Arava, to the Arava itself, Arvot Yericho, and El Ketef, now the Gvul continued on, Avar El Ketef Beit Chogla Tzafona. It went down to the ridge, north of the ridge of Beit Chogla, El Lashon Yam HaMelech Tzafona, and touched all the way the Lashon Yam, which we said means the edge of the sea, to the place where the Yarden spills into the Yam HaMelech, which is the Ktzeh HaYarden. And that now became Zegvul Negev. This is the southern boundary. The Yarden itself was the eastern boundary. HaYarden Yigboloto, the Pat Kedma, Zot Nachalat Bnei Binyamin, the Gvulotea Saviv, the Mishpachota. And so now following the Yarden down to the Yam HaMelech, became now, the Yarden obviously was a Gvul, didn't just meet at a point, as you had originally showed us. In other words, there's an entire eastern boundary, which is the Yarden, and that space is the eastern space of the Ritzua, but the Ritzua does not close itself up, meeting both north and south at the Yam HaMelech.
It does touch the point where the Yarden and Yam HaMelech meet, and it's
on the south. The cities, and here it's interesting that this is the other time that we count cities. We didn't count the cities the way we did for Yehuda. In the other Nachalot, we do for Bnei Binyamin. Yericho, Ubeit Chogla, Ve'imek Katzitz, Ubeit Avara, Utzmoraim, Ubeit El, Ve'ha'avim, Ve'hapara, Ve'ofra, Uchvar Ha'amona, Ve'ofni, Ve'gava, Arim Shtemesre, Ve'chatzrehem. This includes the open areas as well, plus the 12 main cities. So this is apparently unique for Binyamin, and we split it up according to the various areas. So we have the Ketef Yericho, the Ketef of Luz, the Ketef Haryarim, and the Ketef Hayavutz. And so this was Ketef because Yishkon Levetach Alav, Chofef Alav Kalayom, Ubein Kitefav Shachin. So the Gemara tells us the Kitvayim, the shoulders, which were the ridges of Binyamin, were higher than the actual Mokam HaMikdash. They originally had thought that they should put the Mokam HaMikdash on the very highest place. And then they said, on the contrary, the Torah is marked to be Ben Ketefav, because this way it's Kimigdal David Savarech, it becomes a Migdal, which is between the high ridges protected all around. And so the original protection, sense of protection, and nestling that we had in Yehuda from the south and Yosef from the north is even more pronounced here, in which Binyamin itself, we see the Beis HaMikdash as nestled within Binyamin, so that we're protected among protected among protected. So we have our first protection in the Shvatim, which are Evar HaYarden, and that was the original protection, as Rashi says, the Man'ul of Eretz Yisrael. That was the way that everybody had presumed nobody would be able to invade Eretz Yisrael because of the difficulty of getting through Evar HaYarden Mizracha, which was the Sichon Va'og territory. Within that, you're further protected, as Yehoshua points out here, with Yehuda on the south and Yosef to the north. And within that, we have all the ridges of the mountains of Binyamin surrounding the Beit HaMikdash, so that our most private, intimate, protected area becomes that place where Yaakov Avinu lay his head down to sleep under the protection of the Shechina. And there was also the Mitzpah, and the Kvira, and the city of Motza. So this now are the other cities. Remember that this was in the various chavalim were different. Mitzpah was in the Ma'arav Darom area. So Mitzpah, Verav Hamotza, Verekem, Veyir Pe'el, Vetar Allah, Vetzela Ha'elef. Each, as Rashi says, each one of these was a city to itself. Listing here five psukim. And Tzela Ha'elef, this is where Kish was buried later. Shaul's father, Kish, was buried there. So it's called Tzela Ha'elef. Vayevusi, Hi Yerushalayim, Givat Kiryat Yarim. This is Arba Esrei V'Chatzreihem. So here too, we see that we have all of the Hevel HaRishon was 12. Here in this Hevel HaSheni, Arim Arba Esrei V'Chatzreihem, total of 26 Arim. Zot Nachalat B'nei Binyamin L'Mishpachotam. So far, we've gone outside of the original 2.5 Shvatim, which is really 5 Shvatim, which is really 6 Shvatim, if we include Levi. And the remainder, today we hit the first of the remaining 7 Nachalot, leaving us 6 Nachalot to go.